9:16 SEN. Brett Anderson from Inside Football for Fair Dinkum Footy Fans.
Was that your wedding song?
That's a new sting that I haven't heard of before. I was just talking about.
Who's your
new sponsor? needed a change there, but someone's taken some creative license. We might need to have a chat about that later.
Oh, I think it's good. Good track.
That's all right.
You don't mind it? You don't like it?
No, I don't mind it. I'll come up with some better stuff than that.
I'm just trying to think who the band was.
That's Hootie and the Blowfish.
Hootie and the Blowfish. I was thinking of Chocolate Starfish for a sec.
And the hot dog flavoured water or whatever it is.
Exactly. How are you, buddy?
Good, mate. Yourself?
Good. Big week in football.
When isn't it a big week in footy, really?
Yeah, it has been the last couple.
You can guess at all levels. Like, we've got the VFL starting this week, so it's big in that regard. We're seeing that on Channel 7 for the first time. And local footy started last week around Melbourne, so that was big as well. But the first two rounds in the AFL have been amazing, considering some of the results that we've had, and the Bulldogs sitting 2-0 and the Cats sitting on the bottom of the ladder, which no one probably would have predicted at the start of the year or even thought possible. So there's been a lot going on. And then you've got the Gary Ablett stuff. Carlton's obviously blown up with how they're going. So there's always something festering away behind the scenes, and we're here to talk about it.
Yeah, we certainly are. Give us a call, 9429 1116. There's so much footy news to talk about, and we'll get through it with Brett Anderson. What's been a massive week so far heading up to selection tonight. Also, a little bit later on in the hour too, we're going to catch up with a comedian, a guy who does impersonations. Look forward to catch up with Miles Allen, comedian impersonator, and he's got a show at the moment at the Comedy Festival called One Man Breaking Bad. One of your favourite shows, Breaking Bad?
Have never seen an episode.
Neither have I, but apparently it's meant to be excellent.
It is, and I think I'm in the ballpark too. We've never seen an episode of Game of Thrones, which I heard Moons talking about last night. There's a few of those series of shows that have been immensely popular that I haven't really caught on to yet, which is probably a little bit surprising.
That's what happens when you're married with kids.
Well, not really. You get a good opportunity to watch some stuff. It's just not really up my alley. So I enjoy watching documentaries and stuff like that on the History Channel and Doco channels, but not really into Game of Thrones or Breaking Bad.
All right. Now, I've been told that Jumping the Shark is meant to go one episode or one step too many and relates to Happy Days when the Fonz jumped the shark as they had obviously ran out of ideas.
Yeah, I think for a while there, we might have said people might say the footy show
and
jumped the shark. And
It's
still going, and it's doing fantastically well, but probably doesn't have the popularity that it once had a while ago. There's so many options now with free-to-air TV, but also now pay TV with footy shows there all during the week, so that's probably taken some of the gloss off it.
Do we have too much? Are we in footy overload?
Oh, I love the Fox Footy Channel. It's fantastic.
Let me throw that out there. 9429 1116. Is there a point in time where you just have to switch off and say, no more, I've just got to have a night off, I don't want to watch 360 tonight, I don't want to hear what Caro thinks?
Well, the question is, without footy, where would this station be?
Oh, it'd be up SHIT.
Probably wouldn't exist, would it? Exactly.
Barbed wire canoe.
Footy runs this station and it runs this town, so I don't think we can ever have too much footy in Melbourne. So.
But do you ever find yourself just saying, I mean, do you watch AFL 360 every night?
No, not every night. There's nights where
I certainly will watch it. Do you feel guilty when
you don't? Oh, no, not really. I will watch it when I think there's stuff that's broken throughout the day. But if it's been covered, and because we work in a full 24-hour sports station that's talking AFL 24/7, where not everyone's got the opportunity to listen to SEN all day, every day like we do, that there's probably things that go on throughout the day that we've already heard and covered. So they're the times that I won't watch it. But if there's something that's broken late in the day or there's an interesting guest on, I'll certainly tune in and have a listen and have a look.
All right. The big talking point is definitely Gary Ablett's injury this week and the decision by Gold Coast to rest him indefinitely. You've had your ear to the ground. What have you heard about that?
Yeah, look, anyone who was at the round one game against Melbourne would have seen with their own eyes that he was not right, especially after a couple of early tackles from Jack Viney, which were fair and drove him into the ground just like he would any other player that he was tackling. But Gaz certainly didn't come back all that well from that. And we saw what happened in the last quarter where he couldn't even put an arm out to reach for a ball in the goal square, which ended up getting turned over and going the other end. And I think Jesse Hogan took a mark and kicked a goal. But he's not 100%. And ultimately, I think that you can get away with Gaz being the way that he is in terms of what he provides in an attacking element. But he's a non-factor when it comes to defending. And I think he's laid zero or maybe one tackle
in two games.
In two games, which if you've got a broken link in your chain, and AFL defences, the way that they defend these days is it's a bit like a chain. If there's one weak link, teams are going to exploit that. They're so good now at moving the ball and finding that one broken area. If a player can't defend, they're in a lot of trouble. And I wrote that in Inside Footy a couple of weeks ago, that if forget about Gaz's shoulder being the issue. If Gaz isn't going to defend, the Suns can't make the finals because teams are just going to exploit that. And the problem was, is he wasn't the only one who didn't defend in the first round. And again, on the weekend, they've got some other guys who haven't really put their head down and bum up when it comes to the defensive aspects of the game. And that's why they find themselves at 0-2 after playing against last year's Wooden Spooner and second bottom place side.
All right. Can he come back for it? Will we ever see Gary Ablett return to anywhere near his best?
Oh, I think we certainly will. I hope we will. I tipped in with the Brownlow this year, and it's looking quite shaky after two rounds and with how much footy he might miss. But, look, I think the big thing for him too is the contract situation and what's going to happen with Gold Coast, and that's sort of simmering away beneath the surface of his current shoulder situation or his shoulder injury. So hopefully he does get back to his best. Look, he's the best player we've seen in the last sort of 15 years since Wayne Carey and his dad, obviously, Gary Ablett Sr. So you do hope that he'll get back there, and you never write off champions. I think he'll be back there. And you know what? Probably halfway through the season when he's back and fit and firing, we'll be looking back on the first two rounds and wondering why we ever questioned him.
And will he be at Gold Coast next year?
I think he will. I just find it really hard to see him going anywhere other than Geelong, and I find it really hard to see how Geelong fit in him and also Paddy Dangerfield, who I think they're about a 90% chance of landing.
Let's head out to Len in Heidelberg Heights. G'day, Len.
G'day, fellas. Just a little reminder that although you guys talk about football non-stop, the Age talks about football non-stop, except for Essendon. I noticed in the write-up of the game that Sheedy calls one of the great comebacks, blah, blah, blah. The Age second-string journalist who wrote the article had 1.5 lines naming two Essendon goal kickers, and the rest of the article was quotes from, Gunston, saying, we're overrated, we're just one of the teams, which is very humble, but just raved on about how Hawthorn are not as great as people make them out to be, which was, you know, as I say, very humble, but it wasn't the story. And then they had another story about the 3 seconds that would have won Hawthorn the game if the umpire hadn't bounced the ball and if that...
called it.
Yeah, and that's so ridiculous because while the ball was in play, if anybody had been reported, that'd be a report. The ball's live. I mean, it's just... The Age has got to get over its anti-Essendon thing because it's given up a great story on a great match just to show that they just can't stand Essendon.
Yeah, I didn't read the story in The Age, but I was at the game doing around the grounds for SEN, and I thought Essendon was clearly the story of the day. They were fantastic for 3.5 quarters. They went missing there for a period where it just looked like they were running in concrete boots. It looked like they were going to get run over and Hawthorn were going to end up winning the game, and the focus then would have been on what happened against Sydney in round one, and history has repeated. But I thought the way that they fought back, and it was really led for me by a kid in the middle who I ended up giving 2 votes in the SEN Player of the Year to, Zach Merritt, and he sort of flew under the radar for me a little bit. Everyone was focused on, oh, I gave 3 to Cale Hooker, he was fantastic. Michael Hurley, I was probably a bit stiff, I didn't give him a vote. They had so many good contributors on the weekend, Essendon, that you probably could have made a case to give all 3 votes to Essendon players, even though they won by 2 points, which would sound silly, and Hawthorn people would sit there and go, well, hang on, how do you do that? But I thought Hawthorn...
Well, Essendon dominated for 3 quarters, didn't
Essendon
they?
Essendon dominated the game and probably should have been further ahead for those who were there watching, and I think everyone would agree with that. But I thought Zach Merritt was outstanding, and he's sort of a kid who's flown under the radar because he's playing in a midfield with Stanton, Watson, Goddard and these guys. But his performance on the weekend, even when Essendon were going poorly and Hawthorn were making all the running, he was one of the few guys who stood up and said, no, I'm not having this, and really worked his way to worked hard to get his team back into the game. So I think that's where the focus should have been, on performances like that from a second-year player. Cale Hooker was outstanding down back. Michael Hurley. It leaves him with some really good options because Hurley and Hooker's form means that Carlisle, there's no questions about Carlisle having to go back. Danaher was outstanding both in the goal square and when he went into the ruck part-time and taking marks in defence. So I thought Essendon was certainly the story. Look, everyone's going to focus on Hawthorn because there was talk about them going through undefeated from some circles, and that they were this powerhouse outfit. For them to drop a game to a side who had no pre-season, I guess that would be where the focus was coming from there. But certainly I thought that anyone who didn't mention Essendon's performance was probably doing them a bit of a disservice.
Call me silly. Call me stupid. A lot of people have. A lot of people will continue to. I think Carlton will beat them tomorrow.
Carlton will beat who?
Essendon.
No.
I just got this feeling that there's going to be an upset in the round, and I just have this feeling that Essendon may have... Friday. What did I say, tomorrow? Yes. Isn't it tomorrow?
No.
Well, oh, what do they play?
My
Saturday.
Upset's Friday night. I think St Kilda can beat Collingwood.
Yeah, Essendon obviously played out of their skins to beat Hawthorn.
They were very good the week before, too, for three quarters.
Can you keep it up for 3 weeks in a row?
Well, there is going to be a tipping point, isn't there, where eventually a wall's going to come and we're going to find out whether the lack of a pre-season is going to hurt them, I guess. But
that wall won't be Carlton?
I don't think it will be, from what we've seen from Carlton. And with the injuries they've got now, Troy Menzel's out. Mm. There's probably a question mark over whether Andrew Walker will be back this week. I saw him play against the AFL Academy on the weekend, and whilst he had 20-odd possessions, or high 20 possessions, I thought he looked really rusty. So you'd have to question whether he'd come back in. And from what we've seen so far of the Blues and what we've seen from Essendon, take away the fade-out against Sydney, which, look, depends what you can put that down to. They've been ultra-impressive, and there's no way that you could tip Carlton this week, I think, based on what we've seen in the first 2 weeks of the season. But it's been a funny opening two weeks.
Mark Murphy had this to say about what his players need to do to possibly just move forward.
Oh, look, from a player's point of view and from captain, the playing group, we just need to focus on playing footy. There's no point listening to the speculation or getting involved with it. So we're here to play footy. We're right behind Mick. Mick's right behind us, and we've got to improve. We've got a lot of areas that we need to improve on. But as I said before, this Saturday we've got another opportunity to get those things right.
Were you happy to see the Carlton president come out and make the comments this morning with Mark Robinson about the club and where they're at?
Look, he's probably pretty blunt and honest as to where they're sitting. And I think Mick's been really honest as to where.
No Carlton fan out there that'll be under any illusion that their team's going to do anything this year.
No, exactly right. And look, going into the season, look, they had some okay NAB Challenge form, and I think that might have misguided a few opinions. For me, they're always going to be a bottom four side when you look at their list for this year and the way that it's been sort of composed. And bringing guys like Christian Jacks, that's not a decision for now. It's a decision for 5 years down the track. So, look, I don't think that anyone would have been shocked with, I guess, the first 2 weeks, unless you took in some NAB Challenge form, which we've shown in the past hasn't really been the greatest guide of all time.
21 past 12. We will take a break here. Brett Anderson in the studio with us. We'll talk more about the week's events in the world of AFL. Take more of your calls. Steve from Cranbourne, you're up next, right after this.
On 1116 SEN, halftime with Tony Shebeke. For Melbourne's cheapest cars, number one for utes in Melbourne, and boozebids.com.au. Bid, win and save on Australia's largest range of booze.
It is 24 minutes past 12 here on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Now, bad news, folks. Our comedian impersonator, Miles Allen, unfortunately, bad throat. So cannot do our show today, as he's trying to save himself for tonight.
We might do our own Shebex.
Well, what we're going to do, we promised you an impersonator. We're going to give you an impersonator. A little bit later on the show. Start practicing now, folks. It's going to be the old Morning Glories. Who do you do? We're going to bring it up into a halftime today because our impersonator's gone. So we're going to give you the chance to impersonate someone, and a great prize will be given out for the best impersonation.
We're stealing segments, are we?
No. We're just.
Oh, no. This isn't going to go down.
No, we're just filling in.
Oh, no.
What we could have had. They understand.
Sorry, Mari and Gazy, boys.
They totally understand. That's all right. Steve out of Cranbourne. G'day, Steve.
G'day, fellas. How you going?
Good.
Yeah, it's good. I just don't think you're a bit wrong about Carlton going to beat Essendon. They haven't got a hope in hell because they've lost two of their games in a row. And I think St Kilda will have a hope against Collingwood.
Essendon had lost one of their games in a row before they beat Hawthorn.
Yeah, but I think anyone can win on the day, as you can see, that Essendon upset Hawthorn on the day and everyone tips against Essendon. So I think Collingwood will beat St Kilda because St Kilda haven't beaten us since 2010 and we've got the wood over them when it comes to grand finals, mate. So.
Yeah, but you can't say that. 2010, that's 4 years, and tomorrow's teams that will run out Collingwood St Kilda will be nothing like the teams that played in 2010. I mean, you've got a Collingwood that's been depleted by injuries. And they're going to have the top five in the best and fairest last year at the Pies aren't playing with Collingwood tomorrow.
Yeah, well, they're going to be favourites, no doubt, Steve, to beat St Kilda. I just think that if there's going to be an upset this week, that's one that I could certainly see. If we're looking at the nine games and trying to say, okay, well, who could be the upset of the round? The way St Kilda have played over the first 2 weeks and the way that they were last week, has been really impressive with their effort and consistency of effort, and that's the most important thing with young sides is getting I guess, a high-level intensity and purpose for four quarters, and they've been really good with that, and Alan Richardson's got them on the right track there. They were probably a little bit stiff in the end against GWS. It would have been larceny. They would have stolen it, but the way that they were coming home, and then Rewald obviously got knocked out, had to go off the ground. You could have made a case that they were certainly within a chance there of overrunning the Giants. So their first 2 weeks' form has been really impressive. Collingwood have been a little bit up and down. Obviously, a good win in round one against Brisbane. Last week, they got smacked from pillar to post by the Crows. But the way that St Kilda have played their footy, and it's about 100% effort all 100% of the time, I think that there's certainly a case that could be made that they could surprise. I think I'd be more confident about that if it was at Etihad. The MCG, maybe a little less confident because Collingwood play it so well and St Kilda haven't played there much over the last few years.
SMS from Daniel Harford. Oh dear, segment stealing on halftime. Hashtag the shame. Hashtag crying inside.
I apologise.
It's not segment stealing, Daniel. It's not. It's just that our impersonator's gone, so we need to do impersonations. We promised impersonations. I want to see impersonations.
I'm leaving Shebex in the trenches on that one half. It's, that was his idea, nothing to do with me.
What about the idea of John Longmire to play Adam Goods in the Neefel this week?
Yeah, I actually don't mind it. His form in the first 2 weeks of the season obviously has been unsatisfactory. He's been used as a sub last week. I hate the sub rule. I agree with everyone who was talking about it this morning. It's a horrid rule, and hopefully that gets abolished as soon as possible.
Well, the boys were saying this morning they believe it's pretty much on the out. Is that the feeling?
I think so. From everything I know, it's going to be on the out, and coaches are pushing for that. But on Goods, he goes back to the Neefel. He plays this week. I think it's really good that he goes back and gets a four-quarter game under his belt, because playing as the sub can be really difficult. And we've seen kids that have been burdened as the sub in their first few games and how difficult it is for them to come on and make an impact. And I think it's just as difficult for a senior player to come on. Look, Daniel Jan Siracusa was probably the best exponent of being the sub, but even then, when you look at his form, for all the good performances he had where he came on and made an impact, there was certainly just as many performances where he really didn't. So
we spoke to Russell Barwick yesterday about this when we did our Sydney report, and it was brought up by one of our SMSs early in the week that you can't compare Goods and Gene Siracusa as super subs because both clubs are at different stages. Gene was fantastic.
One's
on the
teaching
bench.
Sub.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other one's coming on to actually play a role in a top four side.
And if you could lose a midfielder and you've got to replace him with Goods, you're sort of a little bit out, aren't you?
I think the one thing that we sort of forget with Adam Goods when you think back three games, and yes, three games, but it is 6 months, is that his grand final performance was actually really good. He was one of the few Sydney players who stood up on grand final day and was one that probably wasn't beaten on the day. When you go back and revisit his performance, I thought he was admirable the way that he played. So he's three games away from playing in a really good side in a grand final and putting in a good performance. Yes, time can catch up on you and it can come very fast, but I certainly wouldn't be writing off Adam Goods. I think it's good that he goes back and plays in the Neefel.
Interesting question coming through. Being a Melbourne fan, you might be able to answer this for us. Chris Dawes and his role at the Melbourne Footy Club seems to lack a lot of judgment for a forward. Even when he gets it, he looks like he's going to drop it. That's from Chris.
Interesting. Chris Dawes as a forward, he does get his hands to a lot of the footy. He has had those marking issues in the past where he's probably gone to flat palm the ball rather than that one grab. But I love his work ethic as a centre-half forward. He really does provide a contest when he's up there. Look, he might not take the marks that you'd want as a centre-half forward from other sides, and he might not kick the goals. But I love the way that he works super hard. And as a centre-half forward, not everyone can be Wayne Carey. Not everyone can be Lance Franklin or Dermot Brereton. There's guys who can just be those real workhorses. And that's where Chris Dawes sort of fits into his side. And as long as he's playing his role for the Melbourne Footy Club, and it's helping relieve some of the pressure on Jesse Hogan and a few of the other forwards down there, like Jack Watts, who I think has started the season really well. His position in the side's always going to be there.
Let's have a listen to this bit of audio. Bob on the road sent us through an SMS saying Goods dropped himself, his own decision, and probably the right one. Nick Maxwell, last night on the run home, really insightful thoughts about the sub rule. This is what he had to say.
I don't think that anyone... Have you ever heard anyone say they like the sub rule? What you do is you end up not picking your best 22 at some stage, because you have a guy who's been plays a quarter, then plays a quarter the next week. If you're sub 2 weeks in a row, then you leave him out because you want him to go get a full game, although you think he's in your best 22, but he has to go back and get a full game under his belt. So it precludes you from actually picking your best 22 every week.
Spot on.
Yeah, exactly. We did a feature in Inside Footy last year about debutants wearing the subs vest, and it's something growing up, you never imagine running out to the MCG for your AFL debut wearing a Kermit suit, which we called it, the green vest, which is ridiculous. And to see a kid come on for their debut and have 5 minutes or anything like that, like that's something they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. And unlike, say, KB or some of these guys who made their debuts and it was really memorable, Dermy with his 5 goals in a final, these kids are looking back and saying, oh, so what do you remember about your debut? Oh, I sat on the bench for
three quarters
and sort of picked my nose and did some sprints and ran up and down and waved to the crowd, and then I came on and then I came off and that was it. So it, to me, it doesn't really hold much when you're thinking of kids playing their first game. If they're being picked to play AFL footy, they should be being picked to play 4 quarters or the ability to play 4 quarters.
One would think that the AFL's going to go in bargaining for this one. They're not going to just give it up easily, I wouldn't have thought. So there's going to have to be some sort of, I would have thought, cutting back on the interchange. So maybe we see it come from 120 down to 100, maybe even 80 if they're going to lose the sub.
I'd bring it to 40.
I think a lot of us would.
I think
Rugby League's even chopping theirs.
They are. They're discussing chopping theirs. Is it to 10?
Yeah, well, even less, I think. I think it's currently 12. I think they're looking at maybe 6 to 8.
It's funny how it works, isn't it, all these sports now, considering the speed of the game and the hits and everything like that. And Rugby League's obviously one where the front rowers are getting a fair bit of rest now and they're able to continue to crash in. So, look, when it comes to AO interchange, I'd bring it right back to 40, 10 a quarter and make it a game of attrition. Look, if you get an injury in the first 5 minutes, that's just the game. We've grown up with that from when we were kids. I don't see why it had to change. I'd like to see it go back to the way that it was.
9429 1116, jump on the line. We'll take a break. Sports Central, come back with more of your calls and more of Brett Anderson in just a sec.
On 1116 SEN, halftime with Tony Shebeki. For Melbourne's cheapest vans, number one for vans in Melbourne, and boozebids.com.au. Bid, win and save on Australia's largest range of booze.
22-1, 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. 9429 1116, if you'd like to get on and have a chat. We were just talking, what we were talking about at the break in regards to just finalising our thoughts on the sub rule. Get rid of the sub, bring the rotations down to 40, and it would allow us to see more of those resting players up in the forward pocket like we used to see the old days.
I want to see Gaz, when he comes back, and obviously fit and healthy. I want to see him resting in a forward pocket.
How good.
And the matchup nightmare that would create for forwards, for coaches and for defenders. I want to see Diesel Williams sitting in a forward pocket like he did in the 95 grand final and kick five. I want to see forwards that have midfielders have versatility rather than just being those pure mids. Got a story about that in Inside Footy this week about midfielders and how much percentage of the footy they get in the forward 50, which might give you an idea of players who, or the clubs that are most, best well suited, I guess, to playing with a reduced interchange cap. So their midfielders can actually go forward and have some damage as well. So an interesting little topic, though, the sub rule. It's one that we're going to hear about a bit more over the rest of the season.
And just to answer the question for 087, your last three numbers, no, you're not blocked. We got you. SMS. What people must understand, though, is that the SMS machine goes crazy sometimes. You don't get to see them all. We only get to see 10 at a time.
Exactly.
So 20 through. Come through at once, bang, we don't see you. So, no, you're not blocked. Paul out of Berwick, George. Let's go, Paul.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Just wondering, when did the interchange rule come in the original sub stop? Like, back in the day, they had...
Yeah, when they had the 19th man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was the... Now, 78 was... 78?
Yeah, when we spoke to Steve McCann in the studio the other day, and he was 19th man in the 77 drawn grand final. He was 19th man in the replay, but came on because Crackers came off. And then he said that then the next year, the 19th or 20th man went to 78.
So 78, okay. Yeah. So we came into change then, and we've had the sub rule for, what now, 7 years, I think? It wouldn't be far off.
No, really? I thought it was only three or four.
You know, I think it's been longer than that. From memory, but I'd love to see it go back to the format that we had between 78 and, say, 2008 or whatever it was.
I just thought that the blokes back in those days, the kids, they would have been subs, obviously, their first game.
Yeah, they would have been reserves.
Yeah, exactly. We were just talking about that before, actually, during the break. We were wondering, love to do a stat to see how many kids actually made their debut as a 19th or 20th man.
And some didn't get on the ground. So it certainly was through, obviously, 1966. I remember the St Kilda Grand Final. The sub was in there, and I think it was the sub that day. Was it Kevin Billing, maybe? St Kilda fans might be able to help me out with that one. But that's one of the more famous ones, seeing that I was obviously at St Kilda and plenty of history on the 66 Premiership. So... yeah, it's going to be a topic of discussion for the rest of the year.
I don't want to answer this one, but I'll throw it at you, Brett, because I'm a bit tainted. I barrack for the team, and it's from our blocked man, so just to prove that you're not blocked, can you please explain what makes Cochin an A-grade footballer? His disposal efficiency is below VFL standard. He racks up positions by a chip kick and then runs around for a handball just to chip the ball again, then butchers the ball.
I think what we've seen from Trent this year isn't what we've seen in the past. He has had a tough couple of weeks, and at his best, he's a player who can go forward and kick goals. We saw that when he came, I think, runner-up in the Brownlow a few years ago when Joe Watson won it. He's got elite endurance. He's got a huge tank. He puts his head over the footy. Look, there's certainly some aspects of his game that he can improve, and look, there's plenty of players out there. There's no one that's perfect, and Trent's certainly in that category as well. But look, I'd certainly love him at my footy club, and I think there'd be 17 other clubs who'd be in a very similar boat. So, look, he's an A-grade footballer for what he's been able to produce so far, and look, he's certainly going to be someone who is going to be the forefront of Richmond's push up the ladder, hopefully in the years to come.
Brett, couldn't you argue that if we do away with the sub rule, this is from Tom, and then reduce interchange to 40, we're still going to see players sit on the bench for extended periods? The coaches will want to keep their best players on the ground instead of bringing on a player who could potentially make a mistake and cost the side a goal. I don't think it'll solve the issue of congestion, as it'll just keep the players on the pine for longer than needed. I wouldn't have thought so, Tom. I would have thought that these players are restricted in the amount of time that they can spend on the ground due to the pace. So I would have thought that 40...
Does the pace come back? Yeah. That's the question.
And that's fine. And they might stay on the ground longer.
Play in more one-on-one positions. So we see players staying more at home inside 50. We don't get the congestion around the footy. We see a bit more free-flowing and then one-on-one contests. Look, I think there's an argument to be made for both sides at the moment.
Ray out at Camberwell. Join us. G'day, Ray.
Good afternoon, guys. Love the show. Just wanted to make a point. It's not a first gamer, but in the 1978 grand final, which Hawthorn defeated North Melbourne, Michael McCarthy, and that was the first year of interchange, actually sat on the bench all day with David Parkin as coach and did not get a run. So that's just an interesting insight to as to how times have changed.
Yeah, and someone's asked about Bruce Monteith on the bench for the 80s grand final as 19th or 20th man.
He was definitely on the bench. He was the captain who started on the interchange.
But definitely started on the interchange. He wasn't 19th or 20th. Well, there you go. So still spent a whole day on the bench, even though there was interchange.
That's a bit stiff. Oh. That's going back to the under-9 days where you've got the kid who will just sort of slide him on in the forward pocket with 5 minutes to go. Yeah, but that doesn't happen
most
anymore.
Most junior teams now, they decree that you've got to have at least three quarters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, that's good.
And that's the way it should be too. Thanks for your call, Ray. Cam Mooney had this to say yesterday on the run home. You'll hear him after 4:30 again about Marcus Bontempelli.
When the great Bob Murphy decides to retire... Yeah. The big C is next to your
throw
name.
Throw him the armband.
He uses it. As soon as he walks through the door, you put him on the same level as like a Joel Seward when he walks through a football club. You just know he's got it. And for more reports over the summer, he even let go at a couple of the young guys at his age, just saying, hey, you got to start pulling your weight a little bit more. You got to be a little bit more professional, a lot better.
Gee.
And everything that he gets pumped up about, you know, is just water off a duck's back for him. He just would not. The kind of guy that just gets a big fat head about it. He just goes about his business. He works hard. He's just there to play footy.
At the moment, you would say that is 100% on the ball.
Yeah, you would think so. Look, certainly Tom Liberatore would be within the conversation, I think, as well. We're forgetting him. Obviously, when you're sight unseen, when you're out with a knee injury, and he is the reigning best and fairest winner. But you don't just be made captain because you win a best and fairest. Look, Marcus Bontempelli, leadership. To be honest, it wasn't something that I saw oozing out of him coming through under 18s and through the system. Look, I thought he was a very solid character, very quiet, very circumspect with his thoughts. I thought that he was a very respectful kid. But in terms of being that Joel Selwood type who walks in through the door, I didn't see it. And I think that's something that's obviously developed over the last 12 months since he's joined the footy club. So for Moons to say that, who's had a fair bit to do with him down there and seen a fair bit of him, I think that's a pretty big rap.
9429 1116. Your turn to join in with our stolen segment here. It is who do you do? The Morning Glory do it on Friday mornings. We're going to do it here because we were meant to have an impersonator come on board, but unfortunately due to a sore throat, even though he may have been on another radio station this morning.
So about 10 minutes time, we're going to do that.
No, now
we're doing it
after
now.
This, yeah,
after
now.
After
this break.
Oh, here we go.
9429 1116. Who do you do? Impersonate someone. We've got a prize for the best impersonation coming up.
On 1116 SEN, halftime with Tony Shebeki. For Melbourne's cheapest cars, number one for utes in Melbourne and boozebids.com.au. Bid, win and save on Australia's largest range of booze.
Alrighty, here we go. We were going to have an I paid for us an impersonator. I want to see an impersonator.
And we've got prizes too, Shebang.
Cartoon character on Bugs Bunny. The cowboy character.
Yosemite Sam?
Yeah, Yosemite Sam. I came to see his impersonator. I'm going to see an impersonator. So I'm going to give it
I'm watching a lot of cartoons at the moment. I've been watching Tinkerbell with my four-year-old daughter. That is a good movie series for anyone out there, parents. If you want to watch Tinkerbell, it's good.
Five impersonators, two prizes. Brett Anderson's going to be the official judge. Andrew out at Reservoir is going to kick us off. Good day, Andrew.
Oh, sorry, boys. I think you forget my name is Borat.
Sorry, Borat. How are you?
Very good. You've been talking about this bloody AFL for maybe 1.5 hour. You forget a very big announcement this week. Aussies, your Aussies are coming in the World Cup to play Kazakhstan in the World Cup of soccer very soon.
It's Kazakhstan, are we?
Oksana, my sister Oksana and I have already got the front row tickets for this match at the Kazakhstan National Stadium. And 1 month before, I promise, I get all of the goats and other animals off the pitch 1 month prior and make sure it's in pristine condition for this momentous occasion.
Well, if it's a cow paddock, it'd look like one of the Brisbane or Sydney stadiums that the Socceroos are used to playing on, because that's what they basically are. I think we're actually playing against, is it Kyrgyzstan?
Yeah,
so it's actually not Kazakhstan.
It's not Kazakhstan, exactly.
So it's one of their close neighbours, but
thank
no,
you
that was fantastic.
Appreciate that. Frank Spencer's on the line as well. G'day, Frank.
Hello. It's Frank here. Betty said, I had to ring Betty about the car, and I've got a problem. I had to tell her that, and the problem is, I said, Betty, I've got water in the carburetor. And she said, Frank, how do you get water in the carburetor? And she said, well, I'm in the Yarra River.
Frank, that's unfortunate. Thanks for your call, though, Frank. Really appreciate that. Good luck. Reg, out at Melton. I think we might even have Marcel on the line. G'day, Marcel.
I am Marcel's friend, Reg. I will put him on the phone. One moment.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Reg. Appreciate that. Marcel, coming to the line. Are you there, Marcel? How's your day going? Fantastic. You're looking forward to the weekend, obviously.
Yes, I'm sorry, this is Reggie Guinness. No, he's got a sore throat, so he can't talk anymore. I'm very sorry.
No, I think you did perfectly well.
Like a comedian.
Marcel just doesn't speak.
It's probably not good radio, is it, now, Marcel impersonation?
So we've had a really bad ball rat, Frank Spencer. Marcel didn't speak, so he's probably the only true character at the moment. Hang in there. Reg, you might be a chance. It is a poor start, isn't it? David out of Clayton. It's Mick Malthouse on the line. G'day, Mick.
G'day, boys. How are we?
Yeah, well, thank you, Mick. The Blues, mate, they're not firing at the moment.
Like, a terrible article today by Mark Robinson, SEN's own, in the Herald Sun. Why would he want to stir that pot like that? That is just ridiculous, isn't it?
Mark Stevens, are you looking forward to seeing him?
Robbo.
I'm just saying.
Mark LaJudice, trying to stir the pot.
Mick, are you concerned about your job, Mick?
No, not at all. I wouldn't have thought so. It takes time to build a football side. It takes time to build a football club. There's been some fundamental errors that our football club have made over a significant period of time, and we just believe that with the right people at our football club, we will get it right. And that starts by showing faith in a senior coach for a three-year period at least. You need to build a list. It doesn't happen overnight. And due to some of the poor decisions we've made, it's caused us to be in the predicament that we're in, boys.
Mick, hang in there, mate.
You know all about that, Shebex.
Yeah, I do, Mick. And, mate, we might have a prize for you. I think, Mick, you're sounding fantastic. We look forward to hearing you tomorrow night from 6 o'clock. On the coaches
in the coaches box.
Box,
Mick, I've got a prize here for you. It's Melbourne Storm versus the Sydney Roosters tickets, Saturday the 18th of April. So there's two tickets there to go along and see the blockbuster the Storm.
Give him a bottle of red and white as well.
I'll get this prize sheet over. And two bottles of wine, one red and one white, thanks to AR Property Investments. So we solved the property. We solved the property investment puzzle for you. So
good
well
on
done,
Mick
Malthouse. He probably needed a bottle of wine after the performances over the last couple of weeks. That was actually really good. That was one of the best impersonations I've heard in
a long time.
And
he'll be on, as we said, the coach's box tomorrow from 6 with Hutto, Cam Mooney, and the team from the MCG tomorrow night. And to finish us off, Forrest Gump joins us. Britta, g'day, Forrest.
I might not be a smart man, Shebex, but I know what love is. And Richmond's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. And that's exactly what this segment has been. We had no idea what we're going to get. And it turned out to be not the best. But great try on the Forrest Gump. No prize for the Forest Cup?
No, I think we'll just I think we'll just go with the Mick Malthouse one.
Yeah,
I think,
all right. Happy with that.
We might carry that prize over for tomorrow. We'll leave it for half to give away. So he's no doubt got some good guests come out tomorrow.
Be good on you. We'll be back to wrap up the hour in just a tick.
On 11.16 SEN, halftime with Tony Shebeki. For Melbourne's cheapest vans, number one for vans in Melbourne and boozebids.com.au. Bid, win and save on Australia's largest range of booze.
A couple of minutes to go until we get to the 1 o'clock news. Brett Anderson in the studio. Brett,
hey, Shebex, I reckon we've had a better 5 minutes than the last five that minutes was on radio. It wasn't flash, but totally, you know what? Mick Malthouse did save us. So thank you to Mick Malthouse for calling in there, or his alter ego, or impersonator. That was actually really good. We probably should get him on more often.
It wasn't good. Obviously, people are better when they're half asleep in the morning.
In the morning. The boys do it much better than what we did just then. So that's the last time that you will steal a segment.
Happy with that. Happy with that. Baseball, I know you're a big fan, mate. Jackie Robinson Day today.
Yeah, Jackie Robinson Day is massive in the state. So what it is, it's celebrates he's the first black Major League Baseball player in the modern era. And it celebrates the day that he made his debut back in 1947.
What's the movie?
42 is the movie.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Okay. So that's his number. So every player in Major League Baseball today, coaches, everyone wears the number 42 in honour of Jackie Robinson for what he did for baseball and also for African Americans coming into the game. And so it's the seventh year that every player, it's the seventh year that every player will wear that number. But it's also.
So I always thought that Jackie Robinson's number was retired from baseball.
It is.
But
from 1997, it is retired from Major League Baseball.
Yeah, okay, so it's from Major League.
The only player who wore it was Mariano Rivera, who retired last year for the Yankees because he was already wearing it. So I just thought of a talkback topic, Shebex, and maybe it's one for another day. Is there a number in footy or an Australian sport that should be retired competition-wide? Now, I was having to think maybe Ron Barassi's number 31 might be one that could be retired competition-wide. Or don't we have anyone at all that that should have that honour bestowed on them? But certainly in American sport, Jackie Robinson Day is a big day, and it's always one that's looked forward to by players and supporters and fans alike.
All right, beautiful stuff. Hey, Brett, always great to have you in, mate. Thank you for your time again.
No worries. Good to be with you, mate. And enjoy going back to your normal slot upstairs with Glenn Ridge.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Fitting well with Paul Coburn after the 1 o'clock news. Alan Rodway also to join us. Sports Central Plus after 2, Radioactive. And Tony McGunn, also the Melbourne Rebels coach. Tim Gossage playing in with Terry Wallace. Still all to come right here on Halftime 11.16 SEN. It is Melbourne's home of sports.